Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and I have with me today Joan Early, who I have known for several years. Joan is based in Ohio and is a neonatal nurse working with among the most fragile of all of the patient populations in healthcare. Joan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Joan and I are connected through the LNC Success Connection, and she is a neonatal intensive care nurse, as well as an expert witness and a life care planner. And we'll touch on some of those subjects today. I know that you've been in healthcare for many years. You have your master's in nursing. You've been in the neonatal intensive care unit for 30 years. You certainly have seen a lot of changes with the technology in the last 30 years. What are some of the communication issues that occur in this type of very intense environment in which you work?
Pat, communication is key in the neonatal intensive care unit. Without communication, harm can come to our little patients. And one of the main issues is to keep the treatment team informed about any changes in our patients. And that can be just subtle changes or overt changes. We want to be able to recognize if there is a process going on that the baby is deteriorating, and we want to let our physicians and nurse practitioners, providers know ahead of time.
Give us a sense of this, Joan. You know, I think that many people who are listening are probably used to working with adult patients. What's the difference when you are caring for a neonate and the neonate starts to deteriorate in terms of the how much flexibility do you have in responding?
Well, unlike adults, most of the time when the neonate deteriorates, it's due to respiratory issues rather than cardiac issues. Some of the things they may do that indicates a problem is that they'll drop their heart rate after they stop breathing. So if they don't respond to mild stimulation, then you know that it's a secondary issue. So you may need to provide a blow-by oxygen or CPAP or PPD, which would be bag the baby.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we may need to do that.
And then
now,
I don't want to talk over you, so why don't you finish what you were going to say?
All I was going to say is that it's important to let the provider or the treatment team know if there's a change. For example, if there is a critical glucose level, we need to notify them right away and not wait longer than, this shouldn't take any more than 15 minutes to do that recording. Because now the difference now in charting is we have electronic medical records. Those records you can record in, can type your message in there, call your provider and let them know that there's a critical value.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference of working in the NICU is that it is technology intensive, but you have to be able to do critical thinking, and you have to know a lot about physiology or what could be going on with your baby based on what their risk factors are.
Give us a sense of the hierarchical structure within neonatal units. I know that we have neonatal nurse practitioners, we've got pediatricians, we have neonatologists, we have critical care neonatal nurses. How does the team work together?
Well, I've worked in NICUs where I had worked at night, and primarily there is a nurse practitioner, the NNP, who really takes care of the patient. However, if there are really premature little ones that are going to be born, and they know that from, of course, talking to the labor and delivery, then they would contact the attending. Also, the unit I work in now, there's a fellow who's on, there's an attending. The nurse practitioner may teach some of the interns how to do procedures. They are responsible for going to deliveries, and they can put in lines, and then they can attend the infant if there's an issue, such as them having issues with breathing, their heart rate is dropping, or they need to be intubated, or they just may need less intensive treatment such as CPAP. But they're real adapted. The nurse practitioner is adapted putting in lines, as well as the intern resident. And sometimes the attending may do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse practitioner also writes orders. So in terms of the chain of command, I would go to my charge nurse if there was an issue in terms of questions about what care should go on. And then they would go to their supervisor, then above them, then also to the fellow, and then above them, the attending, and then also there is a person that's a physician that's on for the house. So that's that's what the chain of command would be.
You've got young parents, primarily young parents, who've got expectations that their baby's going to be healthy and everything will go well with the delivery, and they'll be able to take the child home the next day. And all of a sudden, the neonatal nurses are working with parents whose lives have turned upside down. Can you give us a sense of what types of challenges occur in that environment with parents who are faced with a suddenly very different type of outcome than they expected?
This can be very devastating for the parent. And they should be able to, the nurse, as a nurse in that environment, should be able to be empathetic with those parents, allow them to, they're grieving. They're going through, it's very upsetting and depressing for them because their well baby is not well. The outcome didn't occur, as you say, is to what they expected. So you allow them to just to get their, feelings out, their questions out, explain in really simple terms what's going on. And these are, you have to repeat information every day to them and let them know that that's okay. and they have any questions, you'll answer that. And you'll also get the physician to talk to them. And we also let them know that this is their baby and that in time they'll be able to take care of the baby. And that's what the goal is, to get them to be able to get their baby home with them and they'll be able to take care of them. So we provide some care, such as skin-to-skin care when the baby's stable enough. And then when the physician says, or most practitioners says that would be fine. Skin-to-skin care is that we put the baby skin-to-skin with the mother or father. Sometimes they want to do that, or whoever the care person is in the family. And we do that at least for 1 hour, and that helps the baby's saturation, oxygen saturation stay up. It also provides a great way for them to bond. If the mother is breastfeeding, it helps to let the milk down. So it provides something that they can do to help the baby. It also helps the baby grow.
Yeah, you know, I've seen pictures, I think in People magazine, which is what I've been reading for the last 25 years, of notable movie stars. And I've seen some pictures of men who are obviously stripped down to the waist, holding their newborns. And I never really thought of it in the context that you just shared of the bonding experience. It always startles me a little bit when I see it, because I'm more used to seeing the totally exhausted, hopefully radiant mother who's in the hospital bed with the baby. But then sometimes dad's holding the baby too.
Yes, they can. The dads can do that. And that also gives them a part in taking care of the baby. Also, when mom does the skin to skin, and also the immune factors, it helps that. And as I said, it helps if for a breastfeeding mother, it's great because it helps their milk let down. Also, the other things that we do is provide a cloth for the mother to get her scent on that, and we put that in the baby's bed, and also give the mom the baby's blanket, because that helps her milk come down when she's not there.
Mm-hmm. We came into this discussion talking about some of the aspects of your background of being a life care planner and an expert witness and a hands-on neonatal nurse. From your experience, what are some of the liability issues that affect the care of these tiny children?
Well, one really big liability issue is neonatal resuscitation. If the baby isn't properly resuscitated in the delivery room, seconds count, it can have devastating effects. They can have brain damage, or they may not recover. So the neonatal resuscitation was developed in the 70s. And then the NRP has also undergone an eighth edition. So there's an algorithm that we must follow as neonatal nurses, whether you're in a level one, two or three delivery unit, are level one, two or three NICU. Level one would be babies that are 35 weeks and above. And then level two would be a special care nursery. They could have 32 weekers and perhaps provide some minor respiratory support. Level three would be, that's the type of unit I work in. And we have babies on ventilators, oscillators, and CPAP, and feeder growers. But those babies, we don't have surgery there or transport. And there is a level four nursery, NICU in our city, that we would transport those babies to. They have transport and surgery. But back to the delivery room, you have just seconds to go ahead and get that NRP established, resuscitation. That's where communication comes in again. So prior to the delivery, transport nurse and the code nurse, the physician, an intern or fellow or the attending would have a huddle, especially for extremely low birth weight babies. And that huddle would, in that huddle, they'd cover the mother's risk factors, make sure everyone knows what their role is when they go into that delivery, because things should work by clockwork. They need to communicate. There is a leader for the resuscitation, and then everyone knows what their role is. Someone is getting the things that the physician or the nurse practitioner needs, such as a blade to intubate the baby if they need to do that. Make sure the bag is ready. Make sure suction's available. And if they need to put a line in the baby, make sure they know where those lines are in the cart. There's a neocart resuscitation cart there. And then there's a respiratory therapist. And then the intern knows what their role is. Everyone has a role.
Before we continue the podcast, please spend a few minutes getting to know one of the guest speakers who will be presenting at our September 23, 24, 25, 2021 virtual Legal Nurse Consulting Conference. After you have a chance to meet this guest, we'll resume the podcast.
Hello, my name is Barbara Levin, and I want to share with you this exciting opportunity to attend our fourth Legal Nurse Consulting Success Conference, September 23, 24, 25, 2021. Patricia Iyer and I have been very busy collecting information to meet your needs for your best conference experience. During this time of COVID, we are providing an opportunity for you to connect and network with legal nurses, clinical nurses, attorneys, and many others. You can enjoy this conference in the comforts of your home without the cost of travel and earn continuing education units. You can solve your challenges and gain more insight by attending this LNC Success Conference. We have an exciting lineup of sessions and speakers. Wendy Vaterbeck founded Integrity Legal Nurse Consulting in 2010 with the goal to educate and empower attorney clients. Wendy has been a registered nurse for over 30 years with experience in the acute and long-term care settings, as well as ambulatory and home health care. She has also published extensively. One of the sessions during this conference includes a panel discussion with a variety of experts in the legal nurse consulting field. Wendy's knowledge and expertise include subcontracting, and she is going to discuss this further with you. Hello.
Awesome. Thanks, Barb. Yeah, I'm excited to be able to speak about working with subcontractors. I've used subcontractors pretty much since the beginning of my business, and it's really allowed me to be able to find the best fit for the cases because I don't need to feel like I'm a jack of all trades or an expert in every sort of case. So I have a lot of information and experience of working with subcontractors, and then things that put a person, sets them aside as far as someone that I would really want to talk to when they send me their information. So for example, when someone sends me their CV, it really helps to have it look professional, as in no spelling errors, the same font and the same format throughout, as compared to just simply having a document that looks like they've added to it over and over without really looking through it. So that's just one of the things that I look for. And I give instructions to nurses, and I actually am kind of surprised how many people don't follow instructions. So there's simple things as far as what I look for new subcontractors.
Will you be discussing the role of, if a legal nurse consultant wants to hire subcontractors? I understand you will talk about the actual individual who's going to subcontract. Mm-hmm. What about the role of hiring them?
Oh, right. Yeah. As far as what I look for and the communication, right. Like one of the things that I do is that I have people do a sample case. So that lets me know if they will be a good fit or not.
So by people attending your session, there's the potential opportunity that they could work with you on future cases.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, I'm excited about your presentation and your joining and sharing your expertise with others. Please join us for our LNC Success Conference, September 23, 24, 25, 2021. Please see the link below, lnc.tips/September2021 virtual. We look forward to seeing you.
Now you've had a chance to meet one of our esteemed speakers for our September 23, 24, and 25, 2021 Legal Nurse Consulting virtual conference planned by Barbara Levin and I for you. Be sure to get your seat reserved at this link, http://lnc.tips/September2021 virtual. I'll see you there. So it sounds like issues surrounding the resuscitation can be a big source of liability.
Yes. If, for example, the baby's heart rate, according to NRP, if the heart rate is less than 100 and no one is providing positive pressure ventilation, that's an issue. If no one is documenting correctly, it needs to be a minute-to-minute documentation in terms of what the baby was doing at delivery and what the APGARs were. Did the baby cry? What was the tone? They need to know that. What's the heart rate? Is someone calling out the heart rate? Is someone saying, do you need a pulse oximeter so we can see what the oxygen level is? What is the heart rate? Is the baby apneic? And if the heart rate is below 60, we have to do chest compressions. And is an ET tube available? All these things need to be in coordination. Someone needs to be communicating with each other. And if it's not documented, that's an issue too, because if no one has documented what actually happened in the delivery, that is a source, can be a source of liability.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other issues that you have seen that could be potentially sources of liability?
Well, the other thing that I've seen is that if there's a shoulder dystocia and no one has been able to get the baby out because they have to do all the maneuvers to get that baby out. And then, I've seen that. And then also there was no communication overhead in terms of what type of delivery it was. There's certain numbers that they would say overhead or on the phones. You have phones also. Some units have voice therapists where they would communicate that they need to get to delivery fast. But if that's not gone on, then that's an issue too. No communication. Also, if the provider is not able to get the baby intubated in a timely manner, that's an issue.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the respiratory issues that can lead to the cardiac arrest and what a little fragile margin of error there is for that.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Another issue that I have seen in some of the cases that I've been involved in have been skin breakdown, skin concerns. I had a child who was in the neonatal intensive care unit for 3 weeks when he was born, and a younger son who ended up in the hospital for a couple weeks when he developed simultaneously infected nose and throat and ears all at the same time. And I remember when he came home, I counted 17 puncture marks around his body from IV starts and maybe even from blood withdrawal. Can you give us some context of what kinds of skin problems can the little neonate run into?
Well, the number one thing that can cause injury to the neonate are medical devices. And for the preemie, there's not much of an epidermis there or corneal stratum, which does protect them. Their skin doesn't develop in thicker layers like the epidermis until 34, 35 weeks. So a 22, 23 weeker does not have any, there's nothing there to protect them. The skin provides thermoregulation. It also provides some immunity, keeps the water in, keeps them from having insensible water loss. So any types of medical devices, such as what you're mentioning, puncture wounds from heel sticks, and also masks and prongs from CPAP, positive pressure, continuous positive airway pressure, that can cause injury to the bridge of their nose and also their little nares. So we do have some mitigation that we can provide, which is, it's called Meplex, some of the padding that we can put under that. Also, since little ones, say it's 22 or 23 weekers, do not have a lot of skin to protect them, the tape that we put on our neobars that we put the endotracheal tubes, tape those to their face, that can just shear off their little epidermis, what little there is of it. And puncture wounds, you have to be really careful when we do the heel sticks. I have seen before in my early career of a baby that was actually a term baby that got an infection in their heel. It was like an E. coli infection, and they ended up with a lot of eschar. So we have to be really careful with that. And they can have a lot of puncture wounds or IV sticks. The IV itself can cause some irritation and skin problems because the tape that's used can tear off their little skin. The board, the IV itself can press into their little skin. Temperature probes under their axilla, and that can shear off the skin under the arm. And also hypertonic solutions. If we have peripheral IVs and they have more than D12 and a half in there, we wouldn't go any higher than that. The D12 and a half and D10, if there's an IV infiltrate in a little one, can cause some issues. Aside from the area being puffy, I've seen where there are blisters, can be blisters, there are eschar, and we have to have the wound nurse come over to take a look at that. If they have lines in umbilical lines, such as umbilical venous catheters or umbilical arterial catheters, you have to make sure that they're in good placement. So you have to be vigilant about noting where those are taped at. Are they at, if they're at 8 centimeters at the umbilicus, has that catheter moved? If they have PICCs in, PICC lines, peripheral inserted PICC lines, has that moved? Has the dressing come apart? Do you notice that part of the catheter is out further than it was? Are you noticing things such as the baby's heart rate is up and they have a PICC? That's something you want to be aware of so you can notify the doctor. You may need an X-ray to confirm placement so that it's not in there going into their atrium, which would cause some heart anomalies. And you also want to make sure their limbs are not blanching or turning black. Their toes can turn black and they have misplaced umbilical catheter lines in. There's a lot to be aware of with their skin.
Yeah, I just got one tiny peek into the window of your world, Joan, and it already overwhelms me thinking about skin issues.
Yeah.
And that's only one piece that can go wrong.
Well, the skin issues, fortunately now, NAN and AWON have come up with skin surveillance. So we do have nurses that make skin rounds, and we have a wound care nurse that comes to look at the babies and examines their skin. If they have any issues that need to be treated, they take care of that. Some of the dressings they may use for debridement is medical grade honey. So they've been using that a lot. So there's a lot to really be aware of, especially on the little preemies.
And then how does your background with working as a neonatal nurse impact the skills that you bring to being a life care planner?
Well, it's one of the things that we might notice is be aware of as a life care planner is a brachial plexus injuries, and that's a birth injury. And that could come from some of the babies where you have a shoulder dystocia and then the brachial plexus injury when the OB has to get the baby out. So those are the type of injuries we may notice. Babies with cerebral palsy. And I see them when they start out with maybe they might have a grade 3, grade 4 injury. Or there's an abruption, which can be devastating neurologically for the baby. And that goes back to, we were talking about some of the injuries they could have that could be an issue with liability is HIE, hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy. If that baby isn't sent in a timely manner, you have a 6-hour window for cooling. And they and that would decrease the reperfusion injuries that can result from that. So infants with cerebral palsy and some of the needs that they have later in life. And that impacts their life care. Their life, they would need a life care planner for that.
Mm-hmm. I know that we could cover a lot more, Joan. We've just scratched the surface in terms of some of the neonatal issues.
Yes.
How can our listener find out more about you and the services that you offer?
Well, they can go to my website, earlysolutions.com, and you can learn more about me. There's also a box there. They can put their information there. And then I have an email address that they could contact me at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's joanie050@yahoo.com. They could do that.
And let's be sure we let people know in terms of the website, the spelling of Joan's last name has an extra E in it, E-A-R-L-E-Y.
.com. That's correct.
EarlySolutions.com. Excellent. Thank you so much, Joan. This has been wonderful. Sobering for people who are in the childbearing years or thinking in terms of grandchildren who may potentially be born in a premature state. It's reassuring in another way to know that there are so many people in your field who are focused on maintaining the safety of these children as they transition into the next stage of their life.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And we have just a lot of neonatal facilities here in my city. And it's something I enjoy. Older babies, also term babies, can have issues, say with their heart or metabolic issues. So it's not just preemies, there can be older babies, term babies as well. But it's something that I really enjoy doing.
Very nice. Thank you for participating in this podcast. Be sure to reach out to Joan if you have a neonatal case in which you need a neonatal nursing expert or some behind-the-scenes consulting on some of the issues that are prominent in the case that you're handling. And be sure to come back next week for a new interview with a new speaker, a new legal nurse consultant or expert who comes to you through Legal Nurse Podcast. You can also receive the transcripts for these programs by going to the show notes on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com and requesting to be on our list of individuals who receive the transcripts. Thank you so much. This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. Jerry Foster is with me today, and we've just finished a conversation that is going to get your heart racing. I guarantee it. Jerry, what were some of the key points that we covered in your podcast?
Stand out, don't blend in. Because unless you're standing out, unless you are doing all that you can to be noticed and remembered, unless you do that, then you are going to blend in with the rest of the crowd. That's the first thing. And the second point I made was that you were born to stand out and not blend in, to embrace the fact that you have been given very special gifts, skills, talents, abilities, a way of thinking that is all yours. And the opportunity is for you to harness that, to tap into that in those innate skills and gifts that you have to serve other people. And the third thing was to recognize that we live in a brand conscious world. There is a preference for brands because when we buy a brand, we know what to expect. There's no surprise of what it's going to be like when you walk into a McDonald's. You know what the food's going to taste like. There's no surprise if you go into a Starbucks. You know what the experience is going to feel like and what the coffee is like and everything else. And so the thing that I stress as a third point was to put out a brand that will make you undeniably distinct. I can keep going, but this and the other thing, I'll keep going. And the other thing that I shared, Pat, was the simple fact that in today's brand conscious world, you have to position yourself as being preeminent at what you do, which simply means that you have to harness the way you go about putting a big old smile on the face of the people you serve by the way you go about doing it. Now, I call that tapping into your secret sauce, the steps that you take, the things that you do in order to deliver the outcomes that your client is looking for. And to be able to say that you have a way about doing it that is uniquely yours. Because, Pat, when you tap into your DNA, the way you think, the way you serve, the way you follow up, the way you solve problems, the way you do what you do as a nurse, embrace that. Nobody can duplicate that, imitate it, negate it, because it's all yours. It's like your thumbprint. Nobody can duplicate it or copy it. And so the idea here is to tap into your sacred self, tap into those special powers within yourself, affirm your greatness, step into that greatness and go out into the world so that people pay attention to you. I shared, Pat, that one of the worst things that can happen for anybody is feeling as if you're invisible. And I'll add another point to that, Pat. Mm-hmm. The moment someone's not paying attention to you, they feel as if they already know what it is that you can do by the simple fact that you're calling yourself a nurse. What's happening today, Pat, is that people will label you, put you in a pocket. They will put you into a box just by you telling them what you do. For example, I'm a real estate agent. Okay, I put you into the real estate pile. I'm a life coach. Oh my goodness, I put you into the life coaching pile. I'm a nurse. Okay, I put you into the nurse pile. You don't want that, because now you went from being Evian bottled water to just plain water. You went from being Gillette as opposed to just a razor blade. You went from being a Chiquita banana to a banana. Now, I know I'm being a little crazy here, but my point is, well, what is it about these brand names? Well, what they have in common is they're special. And so you have to find that one thing that you excel in, that comes easy to you, that's hard for most others, that few others probably really know how to do in terms of how you serve and how you take care of people and build your brand, pivot your brand around those unique, distinct qualities, those characteristics that define you, that enable you to shine above the rest of the nurses out there. And you have that. Because if you don't tap into that beauty, the beauty of what you've been born with and what you have compiled and put together over all these years, then it's a wasted talent. And you're here to have impact. You're here to go out and serve. And that's the key of having a strong brand. And that's why the most successful companies and people on the planet are what? They're brands. Because we live in a brand conscious world. It's all about the brand. From the car you drive, to where you bank, the clothes you buy. I mean, it's all about your brand.
And to get more pearls of wisdom from Jerry, be sure to tune in for his podcast. He's a brand strategist, and you're going to enjoy what he has to say. Thanks so much, Jerry.
Thank you, Pat.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.